So I will kindly ask now our next speaker, Mr. Randall Anstein, the Global Capital Markets Director of Ernst & Young, to come and deliver to us a presentation on a new era in internal controls, implementing the new COSO Internal Controls Integrated Framework. So please, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for being one of the lead sponsors of the conference.
Thank you very much, Nick, and it's certainly a pleasure for me to be here today. I'd like to thank Capital Inc. and the other co-sponsors of this fine event for hosting and also for kindly inviting me to join you. Nick mentioned, I may have the honor or not of having the longest title on the agenda today for a topic to speak to. And as I was sitting in the audience, I was thinking about the topics that we've heard thus far, which are mostly about finance and creating value. And this little topic is more of an internal topic, but it's one that is also critical to creating value for your companies, particularly if you are external, are reporting externally, for example, to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Let me advance the slides and begin by allowing you to take a look at the agenda that I plan to touch on today. And I thought it might be helpful as you do this to give you a little bit more background on COSO or COSO, as we often refer to it. It's an acronym that those of us that are auditors and accountants and you know, internal folks probably recognize readily. It stands for the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, and it is an organization supported by five separate entities with a very U.S.-centric influence. They are the American Accounting Association, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the Financial Executives Institute, the Institute of Management Accountants, and the Institute of Internal Auditors. The COSO website indicates that it is an organization dedicated to providing thought leadership through the development of comprehensive frameworks and guidance on internal control enterprise risk management and fraud deterrence designed to improve organizational performance and oversight and to reduce the extent of fraud in organizations. That's a mouthful. It's all about internal controls, but where did it come from? What's the history? Well, this can actually be traced back to 1977 and the enactment of the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which actually criminalized, as many of us know, criminalized cross-border bribery and required companies for the first time in the U.S. to maintain books and records that began the focus on internal control. In 1985, the U.S. National Commission on Fraudulent Financial Reporting was convened and chaired by former SEC Chairman James Treadway. Oftentimes, you'll hear COSO and the Treadway Commission referred to hand in hand. In 1987, the National Commission on Fraudulent Financial Reporting issued its report and really gave permanent status to COSO, which in turn retained Coopers & Lybrand at the time to conduct a study and come up with an internal control framework. So that's a little bit about the history. COSO published its first report in 1992. That was the framework that was released at that time. It has existed for a number of years and probably until the early 2000s existed in some anonymity. But after the Enron crisis, the WorldCom crisis, the other failures that we saw in the early 2000s, the COSO framework leapt to prominence because it became the leading framework for evaluating internal controls around the world. Now, this slide depicts two cubes. The cube on the left is the 1992 framework. The cube on the right is the 2013 framework. You'll see there is a lot of similarity between the two. The top of the cube outlines the three objectives for a system of internal control. The front face of the cube represents the five components of internal control. Key term, the five components of internal control. And the right side of the cube represents the operations of a particular entity. Now, aside from some changes in nomenclature and the order, those two cubes look quite a bit alike. We'll talk in a moment about some of the changes that have occurred. Most people ask, well, what is this thing and why do we have this update? Well, a lot has changed since 1992. I'd ask you to think back 20 years of what you were doing in 1992. Probably many people were in the early stages of their career, if not just beginning their career. And I did a little history checking and found that in 1992, we were celebrating the third anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. In 1992, Tiger Woods, the famed golfer, was celebrating his 17th birthday. The formation of the European Union was still about 1 year away, and the drachma was alive and well and strong here in Greece. Mobile phones were very large and very expensive in 1992. And most interestingly, the World Wide Web was really making its very initial public debut just 20 years ago. So a lot has changed since then, and COSO, in this update, is hoping to use the 1992 framework as a baseline and update for today's environment, recognizing that business and operating environments are much more complex, particularly with the use of technology and the broader global reach that it has brought to all of us. Secondly, shareholders and regulators are much more engaged and demanding greater transparency amidst this ever-increasing complexity in laws, regulations, and rules. And so COSO hopes to take the baseline that was working well and step it forward 20 years and improve it. The framework provides, go one more slide here. Yeah, there we go. The framework provides a principles-based approach to apply internal control to any type of entity, regardless of industry or legal structure, allowing for flexibility of judgment in establishing the design, implementation, and execution of internal control, and offering the opportunity to expand applications beyond financial reporting, which is where most of us focus it, to other forms of reporting, operations, and compliance. This slide and the next outlines some of the key changes in the framework, and I'd like to touch on a few of them. First of all, the new framework clarifies the requirement for effective internal control. Effective internal control is a system that reduces to an acceptable level the risk of not achieving one of the five objectives that are outlined on the front of that cube. It requires that each of those five objectives and the 17 principles that underlie those objectives be in place and operating appropriately. Notably, the framework includes what are called points of focus. We'll talk in a moment about those, but these are characteristics or considerations that should be made by companies in determining whether the five components of internal control are present and functioning in its organization. Moving along, some additional changes in the framework. The framework reflects the increased reliance on technology and its advancements. It considers the fact that there are a lot more entities out there today and their extent and use of technology has grown significantly. It also recognizes the evolution of technology from large mainframe batch processing transaction-oriented systems to very highly sophisticated, decentralized, and mobile applications that operate in real time, often at third-party organizations, not just in-house. Another key focus and key area of change is around corporate governance. Corporate governance has taken on a whole new meaning, particularly in the last 10 years in the business world. The framework recognizes this and has included enhanced discussion around the board of directors and its various committees, particularly the audit committee, the nominating committee, the compensation committee, and other governance-related committees. It highlights the important role that these highest levels of an organization play in the internal control framework. Importantly, the new framework also includes a significant increase in focus on fraud and fraud considerations. an effective system of internal control in today's environment must address the expectation of anti-fraud provisions. The framework includes considerable discussion around fraud and the relationship between fraud and internal control. It asks the question, where are the fraud risks, and how does the internal control system address those fraud risks? Lastly, the framework addresses the many different business models that we see in operation today. Business models now include a great deal of third-party outsourcing and business partnering that weren't present 20 years ago. Competition, globalization, changing industry dynamics, and the need for resources have all changed significantly in the past 20 years, and these are all key changes that are addressed in the new framework. There we go. I recognize this slide is probably a little bit difficult for you to read, but on the left-hand side of the slide are outlined the five components of internal control, the front piece of that cube that we were looking at a moment ago. This slide aligns those five components against the 17 individual principles that are deemed necessary in an effective system of internal control. Interestingly, the first two components, control environment and risk assessment, account for more than half of the principles that underlie the components. And this reflects the focus on appropriate corporate governance, appropriate high-level vision toward controls, and the assessment of risk in operating a business. The last three components, control activities, information and technology, and monitoring, comprise the balance of the principles, and I would call these principles the nuts and bolts principles, the fundamental principles that are fully around the design and operation of internal controls. They address selecting and developing control activities, including general controls over technology, and deploying these through policies and procedures. Obtaining quality information is critical in today's world, and communicating that information both internally and externally is a key principle to an appropriate internal control system. Performing and evaluating results of monitoring activities, again, critical, including the evaluation of deficiencies. And let me at this point just say one word about evaluating deficiencies, particularly for companies that are SEC reporting companies. The PCAOB and the SEC both have indicated that there is a significant need for improvement in documenting and executing systems of internal control. Their belief is that the audit inspection findings, which have been very poor around internal controls, coupled with the fact that, clear fact, that there have been very few material weaknesses reported outside an instance where there is a restatement of the financial statements, are both indicators that companies' systems of internal control and their documentation are not as strong as they should be. So in the U.S., the regulators are calling for all registrants to look at their internal controls and utilize this framework as an opportunity to make significant improvements. And there is that expectation. I mentioned a moment ago points of focus. So we've talked about components. We've talked about 17 principles. Each of those 17 principles now has a new point of focus, and there are actually several points of focus for each component, usually 3 to 5 points of focus. The example on the slide is a point of focus for the first principle, actually. You can see there are 4 points of focus, and when you look at the framework, each of those components, each of those points of focus will have 4 to 5 pages of material for someone to evaluate, consider, and match up against its own systems to conclude whether the principle is functioning and in place. A word on transition and impact. This is most critical, again, for those that are using the COSO framework for external reporting. The new framework is now in place. Today it's usable. Not many companies are using it yet, but it is usable. It will supersede the old framework in the middle of December 2014. Any external reporting that is done currently should always specify which of the two frameworks is being used in assessing the internal control system. In terms of impact on companies that we work with, that our firm works with, we're finding sort of three categories. Most companies where the internal control focus has been kept current and the documentation has been updated each year appropriately are finding very few changes as a result of this new framework in their effort. Where companies have what I call deferred maintenance, that is, they haven't kept pace with the changes, there's more work to be done, and we're finding that. And now is really the time to commit the resources to addressing that situation. If there's a need to do extensive work, then it's a clear indication that the company has not kept pace and probably had weaknesses in internal control in the past that it just had not identified. So where do we go from here in terms of a way forward? This slide outlines three sort of high-level thoughts and really should represent a call to action. The first, if it's not already been done, is to create a clear plan for communication within your organization of the new requirements at the most senior levels, including the board, the audit committee, and senior management. Secondly, establish and execute on a process to identify and inventory what changes, if any, need to be made in the internal control systems in order to confirm effectiveness under the new framework. And then lastly, documentation. It's all about documentation. Document the approach that is being taken for applying the framework, including a transition plan and the related documentation. If we go to a little bit more detail on that way forward, building on the high-level plan, in terms of three areas, documentation, management assessment, and internal audit, this first slide identifies six key points that should be addressed in the documentation effort. Begin with a review of existing assessment results and evaluate those against the five components and the 17 principles of internal control to identify specific areas of concern and begin documenting whether the principles are present and functioning. Next, for each component, take the first steps into more detail with a more formal evaluation to assess whether each of the 17 principles is present and functioning, and create a detailed mapping, a mapping exercise of all internal controls to each of the components and the principles. Using the mapping and assessments above, identify supplemental controls that may need to be put into place in order to ensure an effective system of controls. And finally, update the internal control documentation to reflect changes in the framework. This slide outlines two detailed steps for both management and for internal audit. In terms of management's assessment, it's important to update the process to include the appropriate objectives and measure them against the five components and the 17 principles that are built into the new framework. And updating the assessment methodology for evaluating risk against those five components and 17 principles. And lastly, for internal audit, ensure that internal audit is using the new framework in its establishing its plans, execution, and communication to its audit committees. Last couple of slides, a few common questions. These are frequently asked questions that we see. The one I would highlight on this slide I mentioned earlier, and that is remembering that December 15th is the deadline for the use of the old framework, and so any reporting that is done thereafter should be done under the new framework, and the Securities and Exchange Commission has indicated that it will challenge companies that get close to that cutoff date and are not using the new framework yet. And the one question I'd like to highlight on this slide relates to what materials should be used. The COSO framework, believe it or not, includes over 500 pages of materials that are available for companies to use in establishing the updated framework. None of those are required, but they do represent a very good sort of path to follow, input to establish your individual plan and transition in your organizations and would encourage you to look at it. So that's kind of an overview of the 2013 COSO internal control framework. One last thought for companies that may be considering going public in the United States. Our firm, Ernst & Young, has had the privilege and distinction for about 15 years of being the leader in taking companies public from an accounting and advisory perspective. From that, we've learned that the internal control area is one area that is critical in the IPO process, but an area that is often falls toward the bottom of the list in terms of priorities in the rush of executing an IPO. So we encourage companies in the process of planning for an IPO to ensure that their internal controls are up to speed and that they will be able to report in the future when they have those requirements. Thank you for your time and attention, and enjoy the rest of the conference.